You're listening to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Pennsylvania-born Daniel Boone was perhaps America's best-known and celebrated frontiersman when the frontier was west of the Appalachian Mountains. Boone made his name as a hunter and trapper early in his life, but eventually led white Americans into the wilds of present-day Kentucky. A new book, Blood and Treasure, Daniel Boone and the Fight for America's First Frontier, chronicles Boone's adventures and his numerous battles with Native Americans. Best-selling authors Bob Drury and Tom Clavin wrote the book. Bob Drury joins us on today's Smart Talk. Mr. Drury, thank you very much. All right, and one question I have to get out of the way right off the bat. Daniel Boone didn't wear a coonskin cap?
Good morning, Scott. No, he did not. In fact, let's dispel two myths about Daniel Boone. One, he did not die at the Alamo. That was Davy Crockett. I can't tell you how many people come up to me and say, so explain to me a little bit more about Boone's death at San Antonio at the hands of Santa Anna. And I'm like, nope. I blame. And also the coonskin cap. He was of average height for his era, 5'7", 5'8". But he was jealous. His cousins on his mother's Welsh side were all kind of giants for the time, 6'2", 6'3". And he felt that he was short and that a coonskin cap made him seem even shorter. So he wore a wide-brimmed and tall hunter's hat. So we got those two myths out of the way, and I think we can move on from there.
Yeah, I think you're right. So why did you decide to write about Daniel Boone?
It's funny. When Tom Clavin and I, when we first conceived of this book, Daniel Boone was nowhere on our radar screen. What we wanted to do and what we feel we have done was write a biography of an era when the country began transforming itself from a sparsely populated string of villages and towns along the Atlantic seacoast and into the nascent nation that would become the United States. And we had much success with a previous book, The Heart of Everything That Is, and we chronicled Western expansion through the eyes of the Sioux warrior Red Cloud. So we were looking for a Native American, an American Indian, who could guide us, who could be our scout through this era. And it just wasn't to be. I mean, Pontiac's flame burned bright, but it was snuffed out too soon. Tecumseh wasn't the right time. He was a little bit later, and it's just as well because Peter Cousins, a wonderful author, came out with a biography of Tecumseh. And there were other Native Americans that you have never heard, Cornstalk, Blackfish, Little Turtle, but none of them just fit the bill. And we were even thinking maybe a Frenchman or an Englishman because they played such a big part in the early stages of what was to become the United States. But none of them fit the bill either. But it's funny, all our contemporaneous research, journals, diaries, broadsheet newspapers, one name kept jumping out at us, Boone. And it wasn't just Daniel. His grandfather, George, in the early 1700s, stood side by side with William Penn. When Penn was I'm sure you know Pennsylvania was the only colony that did not have a militia to deal with Indians, to slaughter Indians. Let's put it straight. William Penn tried to deal with them somewhat fairly. And when he was making these treaties, standing right next to him was Daniel Boone's grandfather, George Boone. And when white settlers began to inch their way off the coast and into what was then the interior, the unknown of the Great Smoky Mountains, the Blue Ridge Mountains, it was Daniel Boone's father, Squire Boone, who led one of the first wagon trains into North Carolina. And as a matter of fact, 16-year-old Daniel Boone was he was in charge of supplying the meat. Even by this point in his life, he was a hunter supreme. And so Tom and I kind of looked at each other saying, this is kismet. I mean, we're looking at the Forrest Gump here, the Zelig of the year. Boone was everywhere. He fought next to George Washington in the French and Indian War. He was a mythic long hunter, kind of a Johnny Appleseed, a Paul Bunyan. And I know I'm getting way ahead of myself, but his participation in the American Revolution kind of saved George Washington's bacon when the British planned a pincer movement to move out of Canada and Detroit under Henry Hamilton, General Henry Hamilton, while Cornwallis was landing on the coast in the south. And the siege of Boonesboro is what broke that pincer movement. So that is a long-winded answer to your question of how we decided to write about Daniel Boone.
Well, a lot of times when I discuss a biography, we do it kind of chronologically. And I'll get back to some of that chronological information. But since you mentioned Native Americans, American Indians, that is one of the biggest themes in your book. I mean, many people, from what they learned in history class, when they think of Daniel Boone, other than the TV series and those myths that you referred to, think about Daniel Boone, the Cumberland Gap, opening up the trail to Kentucky. And, you know, we'll get into all those things. But the one big takeaway from your book is the number of battles, fights, just continuous in Daniel Boone's life with American Indians. He had two children killed by Indians, two brothers killed by Indians. So, I mean, I wonder whether Americans really realize what this was like in that time period between white settlers and American Indians.
It was barbarism. I listened to your previous segment, and I thought it was a wonderful segue into what we're going to, or what we are speaking about, because you talk about hate crimes. I mean, to the Euro-American immigrants who were settling this country, or who were, as Francis Jennings, the wonderful historian, said, they didn't conquer the country, they stole it from the Indians. But the Indians were considered subhuman, heathen, savages. I mean, you had, whether it was Cotton Mather preaching from his Boston pulpit about destroying the red sons of Satan, or even such luminaries as Thomas Jefferson, who once considered the idea of eliminating every Indian tribe between the Atlantic Ocean and the Mississippi River. It was the ultimate hate crime. And the irony is, in this age of anti-immigration, it was the immigrants who were destroying the indigenous people. And Boone, what I came to really admire and respect about Boone, well, he was certainly, and don't get me wrong, he was a man of his era. And, but more so, he also had one foot, I guess you could say, in the 21st century, because as a child in Pennsylvania, growing up right outside of Reading in Exeter, Pennsylvania, he would attend these Indian trade shows where the whites would trade with the Native Americans. And he came to respect the Indians. He came to appreciate their knowledge of natural medicine, how a certain poultice could stop a gunshot wound from being infected, or how a mixture of certain barks could cure a snake bite or stop a snake bite from becoming lethal. And he also admired the way that many of the headmen allowed the elder women of the tribe to make important decisions on when to have such a feast, when to have such a hunt, which was unheard of in even the most liberal white communities in the 18th century. So he understood. Now, once again, I am not trying to sugarcoat him. He was a man of his era. He would say things today that would be totally out of bounds. Like, let's make the Indians more white. Let's make them more like us. But on the other hand, he did understand them. He was captured at one point and adopted into the Shawnee tribe. And when he lived with them, he rued the fact that because of the white men's guns, alcohol, diseases, he knew that the Indians were destined for semi-extermination. But he felt bad about that fact. He wanted to know, why can't we live together? I said before, he wanted to make the Indians more white. Why can't you take up farming like we do? Why can't you build your cabins like we do instead of moving your teepees from hunt to hunt? And I thought, even though he was firmly planted in the 18th century, he had some very forward-thinking ideas about the indigenous people that, unfortunately, he was there were few and far between who felt that way. Mm.
And we're going to talk more about that a little bit later. As you mentioned, Boone was born outside of Philadelphia, but grew up in what is today Berks County, Exeter. That's where his passion for hunting and the outdoors began. What did he do besides going to these Indian trade shows? How did he become the outdoorsman, the frontier, the pioneer that he became in Berks County?
Well, his father, Squire, had a grazing area, a field maybe 10 miles from their main house. And every summer, Boone's mother would take 10-year-old, 9-year-old, 8-year-old, 11-year-old Daniel with her to tend to the small herd of cows, small herd of cattle that the Boone family had. And Daniel just started exploring the woods. And he started following this, you know, these trails that were millennia old, cut by not only by Indians, but by before that, by buffalo. Believe it or not, buffalo once roamed quite east of the Mississippi. And he just fell in love, and he never got lost. And he just, his métier was being alone in the forest. And I think when he was 11 years old, his father gifted him with a fowling piece. And so he learned the way of hunting. He learned that you just don't take one buffalo down, or you don't take one bear down. You follow the bear to their masting grounds where they're fattening up for the winter. And that way you could take two or three, and you can trade the bear skins for shot, for gunpowder. He found that, you know, I could go on and on about his tricks of the trade, about it was easier to you could find more deer at both sunrise and sunset, because that's when they'd be along the streams eating the moss. He by the time, as I said earlier, by the time his father Squire decided to move the family, the clan, I should say, cousins, into North Carolina's Blue Ridge Mountains, 16-year-old Daniel was put in charge of, you're the hunter. You're the one that's going to bring in meat and fowl, and you're the one that's going to feed us. And Daniel did a wonderful job of it. He was just one of those men that he was at home in the wilderness. I'm not saying he was a misanthrope, because he certainly enjoyed the company of other people, especially his family. He was a very, very strong family man. But he was one of those people that he could go on a long hunt for 12 months, for 18 months, and come out his pack horse laden with deer skin or otter pelts. And he never minded being off by himself. So go ahead.
When you say that sometimes he'd be off by 12 months, 18 months, he married Rebecca Bryan, a fairly well-to-do family in North Carolina. But when he was off on one of these long hunts, and I don't want to make a big thing out of this, but it's just unusual, he came back to North Carolina and his wife, who had had a baby, to his brother, because she thought he was dead, right?
Yeah. Well, that was the era, Scott. It actually wasn't a long hunt. He was off on one of the, it was not Lord Dunmore's war. It was the Cherokee War. And he was gone for, I think 10 months. And on the way back, right where Kentucky meets North Carolina, meets Tennessee, he had never seen this territory. So he asked permission. I'm going to peel off. You're all going back to North Carolina. I'm going to stay around here and explore for a couple of months. So he's gone for 15 months. And he gets back to the Blue Ridge, his home in the Blue Ridge. And there is Rebecca nursing a young girl, Jemima. And Daniel, he's like, okay, what happened here? And he had a brother whose facial resemblance was such that they could have been twins. And Rebecca just said, listen, I thought you were dead. I'm a widow with young children. She had already had two other children. This was the third. I'm a widow on the frontier, what was then the frontier. I took succor with your brother, and one thing led to another, and this is your daughter, Jemima. And Daniel kind of looked at Rebecca, and he looked at Jemima, and he smiled, and he said, well, at least it's all in the family. And he treated Jemima like his own daughter.
Well, actually, Daniel Boone's legend grew when his daughter Jemima was kidnapped by American Indians. What happened?
They were already in Kentucky, and Boonesboro was their settlement along the Kentucky River. And north of the Kentucky River was Shawnee territory. And every kid was told, you don't go north of the river. So Jemima had cut her foot, and she was, she and two other girls, she wanted to dip her heel where she had cut it into the Kentucky River. And the two other girls said, there's an island down, you know, we know that island. There's wild onions growing. Let's make a poultice for your foot. But the current caught them and took them to the North Shore. And it just coincidentally, a scouting party, which included both Cherokee and Shawnee, they kidnapped the three girls. So they had 4 days, they ran north. They were running back towards the Ohio River. They were going to cross the Ohio and get back into the Shawnee villages. And Daniel formed up a posse, and he chased them. And he chased them day and night, and he found them. And there was a gunfight. Two of the Indians were killed, and he rescued his daughter. And oddly enough, what, 40 years later, I'm not quite sure of James Fenimore Cooper's dates, but I think it was about 40 years later, Fenimore Cooper made that the centerpiece, the white girl being kidnapped by Indians in The Last of the Mohicans. So Boone was even a legend during his own lifetime. And I'll tell you one other thing, Scott, that kind of jumps in my mind. We're talking about Boone the legend. He went to his grave at the ripe old age of 85, by the way, in 1820. He went to his grave despising the fact that he was known as America's premier Indian fighter. He took part in several Indian wars, and he killed his share of Indians. But he hated the fact that he was known as an Indian fighter and not an explorer and not a pathfinder. Because once again, we're circling back to what I was talking about earlier. He respected the Indians. He didn't treat them as savages, as heathen, as subhuman. He went out of his way to learn their languages, to learn their ways. And whenever he was described in newspapers in his old age as the Indian fighter Daniel Boone, It just threw him into a fit of pique.
We had a phone call from a listener, Maria in Lancaster, said a relative of hers traveled with Daniel Boone in 1769. She was curious if you came across his name in any publication or research. William Cole?
Yeah. Spell the last name.
Coole.
Yes, William Cole. In fact, he was not part of the group, the woodcutting group that Daniel Boone led through the Cumberland Gap. But later on, he was a settler. He was one of the earliest settlers in Kentucky. I don't believe he lived in Boonesboro. I think he lived in Harrodsburg. Harrodsburg is the oldest settled town still there in Kentucky. But yes, the men and women of that era, Scott, well, maybe you can. Maybe you're a giant outdoorsman. But I just can't imagine the hardships they went through. I mean, the suffering in winters while they're still building their cabin, and there's 3 feet of snow and it's below zero, and half of their group is dying off of frostbite. And boom, come spring, they just go about their business like that's kind of the way of the world. So William Cool, and that's a cool name, too.
Well, yeah. When I saw this, I thought to myself, okay, I kind of recognize that name from your book. I think he is mentioned in the book, if I can remember. But anyway, Kentucky. Again, Daniel Boone, most famous for going through the warrior path and leading whites into Kentucky. This is where most of the battles between American Indians and the whites. The white settlers just kept moving west, taking Indian land. So how did Daniel Boone lead these settlers into Kentucky? I have about 3 minutes left.
Okay, quickly. When Boone fought in the French and Indian War, the Seven Years' War it was called in Europe, he ran into an Irishman who had traded in this land over the Appalachians that was kind of the Cherokee, the Shawnee, the Miami, the Delaware, they all had a deal. Nobody settles Kentucky. It's going to be our hunting ground. And of course, Boone, when he heard hunting ground, he just could not stop himself. And sooner or later, he made his own way with his brother and a small party into Kentucky, and he just founded God's green earth. It was Eden as far as he was concerned. And he explored it. He was captured by Indians and let go. You know, they took his furs and they took everything, but they said, now get out of here and don't come back, more or less. But finally, at one point, when it was inevitable that the Euro-Americans, or for this time Americans, were going to spill over the Appalachians, he led a party through the Cumberland Gap, which, of course, he did not discover the Cumberland Gap. The Indians had been using it for thousands of years, but he was the first white man to lead a party through the Cumberland Gap, and he settled Kentucky. And as you say, there had been many previous wars, but coming into what was the common communal hunting ground, invading it more or less, that set off a whole new chain of battles and combat. Mm.
Bob, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Love the book. Also, read your book, Valley Forge, which I also enjoyed as well. But I wanted to say that I wanted to ask one last question in about 60 seconds or so we have left. What should Daniel Boone's legacy be?
Pathfinder. Pathfinder, explorer, not Indian fighter. And in the 45 seconds we have left, since I am talking to a Pennsylvania host of a Pennsylvania station, I'll say one more other thing. The famed Kentucky Long Rifle should be called the Pennsylvania Long Rifle, because it was perfected. The musket barrel was rifled. It was bored with rifled by German immigrants to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. That's where the Kentucky Long Rifle comes from, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So from now on, when you see one, you can correct somebody and say, that's not a Kentucky Long Rifle, that's a Pennsylvania Long Rifle.
And Lancaster is mentioned several times in your book, because many of those who settled in the West got their supplies in Lancaster before they went West. But Bob Drury, your co-author is Tom Clavin. The book is Daniel Boone, Blood and Treasure, Daniel Boone and the Fight for America's First Frontier. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, Scott, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.